call this work session of the Board of Food Supervisors of Fluvana County to order. Please stand for a moment. We're pledged allegiance to this moment, huh?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Do we have an adoption of the agenda? Do I have a second? Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
And Mr. Weaver? Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, motion passes 5-0. Mr. Dahl?
Yep, just have a few things to report, Mr. Chair. So one, happy early birthday to Ms. Eager, who has a birthday coming up next week. Also, if you remember, like we do every year, we have the elected officials breakfast. This year, we'll be doing the elected officials breakfast, but in a virtual form. David Blount and Kelly have been kind of coordinating to get the elected officials together, so we'll be doing something via a Zoom meeting of some sort.
Yes.
So again, it's going to be October 8th from 9 to 10:30. We'll make sure that we send something out to one, block off your calendars in the interim, and then whenever the final Zoom meeting comes out, we'll make sure we get that information for you as well. And I guess we could do, you know, for maybe those that want to do something in person, we could maybe even set up something here, kind of like we're doing, and those elected officials that are away, they could do it from the Zoom meeting. So we can work on some of the planning for that piece of it. But like I said, we'll send you something to mark this date off. We've got another drive-through testing event happening for COVID-19. It's going to be Tuesday, September 19th, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. The Fluvana School Board Administration Building, the School Board Building, they've offered up their kind of drive-through loop to do the drive-through testing. Again, people can call 434-972-6261 to schedule an appointment. So the testing event's Tuesday, September 15th. To schedule an appointment, you either need to call Friday, September 11th or Monday, September 14th, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. One of the differences with this one is walk-ins are welcome. So you don't have to have an appointment ahead of time. But if you want to make sure that you're guaranteed to be able to get tested, you might want to call ahead of time. In a presentation that we have this evening from Ryan McKay with the Thomas Jefferson Health District, he'll kind of be going over numbers and tests and stuff like that for COVID-19. Also, just kind of as we've been doing, so Virginia Employment Commission, we got some recent numbers as of last week. So the last time I reported on this, I think, was the first meeting in August, so about a month ago. So you can see right here, this line kind of shows continued claims, basically those that are receiving benefits. So we've had, this week we've had one of our lowest continued claims that we've had in quite some time. In addition, initial claims, those that have filed it that may not be receiving benefits, you know, as we've said before, we kind of take a four-week total. So where we were before, as of August 1, we were around 7%. Now we're at around 4.3%. So it's gone down significantly from the initial claims and the continued claims. Also, the Sheriff's Office is now posting statistics on their website. They're updated monthly. If you want to go to the Fluvana County Sheriff's page, and there's a page dedicated to statistics, the Sheriff's Office put something out on Facebook as well regarding this new implementation that they're doing. And I'm sure Sheriff Hess could comment on this at some point. But like I said, you know, I think kind of as the community was asking, they're starting to put some statistics out there. And September is National Preparedness Month. week one, September 1st through the 5th, is, you know, make a plan, talk to your friends and family, you know, communicate before, during, and a disaster. Week two, September 6th through the 12th, is build the kit. You know, gather supplies that'll last for, you know, quite some time during a disaster. So just make sure that everyone's prepared and planned. And one other item, so we have the second round of our From Fluvanna Small Business Grants. If the board remembers, you funded up to $950,000, $450,000 for each round, $350,000 for for-profits and private schools, and $100,000 each round for nonprofits. They previously funded, the first round funded at $398,000, so that means we have $502,000 available. Round two, the application period opens up September 4th, and it'll be open for 2 weeks. It'll end on September 18th. You know, we're trying to get the word out and trying to get the word out to businesses that didn't apply the first time that there's still a second round available to apply. And just kind of as always, you know, we have some of our county resources. And one thing I wanted to do, I wanted to follow up with the board on just a few things for BOS follow-ups. At the last meeting, I meant to do this, but since I didn't have a reminder, I forgot. The Board of Supervisors periodically, you know, ask for some updates on roads and stuff. So I just wanted to address some road updates and stuff from VDOT. I know Mrs. Eager had asked about a turn lane on Blue Ridge Road on the intersection of Route 250. They have went out, they've gone out and looked at that, and that location did not meet the volume requirements to install a right turn lane at this point. We also asked VDOT about looking at center lines down in the Bremo area of Fluvanna, specifically Route 52, which is Academy Road, Route 655 West Bottom Road, and Route 656 Bremo Road. For both Academy Road and for West Bottom Road, they did not meet the 18 feet wide consistently road width. And in addition, it didn't qualify due to traffic count. And then also Bremo Road did not qualify for the traffic count as well. So those roads will not be eligible at this point for any center lines. And Mrs. Eager had asked previously about Ridgeway Farm Drive, asked if there had been any surety bonds that were outstanding for that property. Bethel got back with us and said that those surety bonds would have been released back in 2003, 2004. So there's nothing outstanding for that. Also at the last board meeting, Mrs. Eager got a question about Ravana Solid Waste, about going there and getting a voucher. Someone said that if they got a voucher from Fluvanna that they could drop off hazardous materials. We had staff call Ravana Solid Waste, and they said Fluvanna is not eligible to participate in that program. It currently is eligible to Nelson, so I'm not sure if Nelson has an agreement for funding with Ravana Solid Waste to do that, but Fluvanna is not eligible from our discussions with them. And the last thing is, Mrs. Booker had asked some questions regarding Dollar General about some pavement markings and some overgrown grass that's right there. It was pretty tall and kind of creating a little bit of a hazard. The grass has been cut at this point, but we're still waiting for some updates. I sent a letter and an email off to Dollar General Corporate just to make the entry and exit a little more clear there. But that is all that I have for the board. And again, our next board meeting will be September 16th in the library again. October 7th at 4 p.m. in the library, and then October 21st at 7 p.m. in the library. And I'd be happy to answer any questions from the board.
Are there any questions?
I have a question for Sheriff Hess, if he's online.
Yes.
Sheriff, I looked at the statistics that's on our website. And the only question I want to ask is, Will any of that get out to the community since a lot of people don't use computer? Is there any plans for any other type of communication?
When you think
we
used to be in the Blue Banner Review, Ms. Kluger, but because of the size of their paper that they're putting out now, they haven't had room for those stats. I don't know, we'll put our heads together and see what we can come up with, but we'll be glad to share it with whatever organization wants it. Anybody that would like to come in and sit down and go over things with us, we'd be more than happy to do that. If you can think of anything, let me know, but I'll get back with the command staff. We'll see what we can come up if Eric Dahl or Kelly or anybody can think of some way. We can appreciate the insight.
Okay, because it's so hard now to get together because of the virus, you know, to invite you in. That's a pretty hard thing to do. So, but we do need to see if we can't communicate some of that
Maybe we could do it in a printed form and send it out to all the churches. And then they can have copies there for people to pick up and utilize. That's the quickest way. It's coming online right away. Let's see what else. But we'll put our thinking caps on. And if you think of something, please let me know.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? All right, thank you very much, Mr. Dahl. I'll now open the first round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board, please say hello on your phone and keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. And I see that we have one person for public comment. You may go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Rudy Garcia, 802 Savannah Woods Drive, Fort Union, Virginia. Fellow supervisors, glad to see you on Zoom. Today I want to just talk to you a little bit about the equity work that's being done in the county by the Savannah County NAACP chapter. One of the tasks that they've undertaken is to be working with the Sheriff's Department to develop a database and a listing of offenses by demographic. And we've met with the sheriff, several of our committee have met with the sheriff, and he's been able to provide us with some information. However, because of the limitations of the software package that he currently has, he's indicated that he's going to need additional money in order to get us the information that we're asking for, the information that the public is asking for. So I'm here today to make a pitch for additional funding for the sheriff when he presents that. I don't believe he's done that yet, but when he presents that you would consider that positively, because the information that we get can help us do some more work in bringing equity to our county. And by bringing equity to our county, we can improve prosperity across the county. So, subject to your question, that's really all I have tonight.
Is there anyone else at this time wishing to speak to the board? Seeing Ms. Harris shaking her head no, I will now close the first round of public comment. Public hearings, I see that we have none, but we do have three action matters. A, FY21 CARES Act funding for election supplemental appropriation, Ms. McIver.
Good afternoon. I'm here. Seems like all I ever talk to you guys about now is CARES funds. The county has received some additional CARES funds this time from the election department. We've received $54,519. These funds are to go to protection of the public, the voters, staff, volunteers, anything to prevent COVID. Cleaning supplies for PPE. They are being supplied with some PPE and cleaning directly from the election department. This is for additional thing, installation of security, anything related directly to COVID this can be used for. Much like the other CARES funds we've gotten, it does have guidelines and stipulations on what it can and cannot be used for. and it cannot be used for anything that would be necessary if COVID-19 didn't exist. So we can't use it to offset costs for in-person voting, the early voting. Thank you. Cannot be used for early voting because that already existed, but it can be used for anything that's additional due to COVID-19. One difference also between regular CARES funds, instead of being coming to be spent by December 30th, these funds must be used by November 30th. So an additional 30 days earlier. And just like regular CARES fund, anything you do not spend has to be returned to the state.
Yep, and again, so one thing, Ms. Joyce Pace, the Fluvanna registrar, she is on the phone, so if you want to...
She is, but she's muted.
If you want to ask questions, but again, as Ms. MacGyver said, it gets a little, it's a little gray in some things because we kind of have a, kind of somewhat of a double whammy. We've got an early voting one. We got the registrar's office that's transitioned. We have early voting happening now, plus you have some new requirements due to COVID from... you know, absentee ballots, whether they do anything on the sidewalks or additional mailing. So it's going to make it makes it a little challenging for us to make sure that we're putting the right pots of money and the right expenses to the right pots of money. But anyway, you know, we're investing these funds just like we are all the other CARES funds, and the dollars are being tracked. So is this Pace on there?
Are these additional funds?
They are additional funds. They are additional funds specific to the registrar's office only.
Okay.
She is on, but she is muted, and I can't unmute her.
Okay.
Does she have hers muted?
Oh, on her side, she should be able to hear us.
Ms. Pace, if you want to comment, you are muted right now.
And she has to unmute.
Joyce Pace.
Yep, there she goes.
Ms. Pace, are you on?
There.
Ms. Pace?
Technically, the drop-off boxes would be early voting.
They would.
They do allow for mail drop boxes, but if we were already planning on getting one due to early voting, then that would not.
Well,
if you were getting an additional one strictly because you're expecting more for COVID-19, that you could probably cover.
My question would be, part of the work that we did previously was done because of COVID. We put the shields up, things like that.
Some of that stuff, yes.
So some of that can...
And that was put into our CARES funds.
Yep.
The additional safety precautions that we put in place for COVID-19, those were paid with CARES funds,
okay.
Regular CARES funds.
You know, for instance, she's going to have some additional personnel requirements because, you know, there may be more absentee voting. If they have to go out to, you know, do anything to out of cars or anything like that, that would not necessarily be taking place if COVID hadn't come into play. So there'll be some personnel dollars going to a regular budget, some personnel dollars going to specifically to a CARES budget too, because there's an early voting factor for her new office that she needs staff for that piece as well.
Are drop-off boxes limited to districts or not?
I couldn't tell you. That would probably be a question for Ms. Pace.
She's there now.
Joyce, are you there?
She's there. I'm not sure what's going on.
Maybe she doesn't have a microphone.
Well, it says she does, but...
Yeah, that's... Mr. O'Brien, I don't know that answer if they're specific to voting districts. Like, you know, could we only have one drop box for each voting district, or... And I'm not sure...
Well, for example, at the lake, a lot of people from Cunningham, you know, district, you know, complain about having to go all the way down to Antioch,
yep,
in order to do that. So having a drop-off box near there.
Then that comes back to, of course,
you can always go to the registrar.
Well, that comes back to going to look at my district. You can drive 13 miles in one direction and 15 miles in the other direction.
Yeah.
I agree. So do we know how many drop-off boxes are planned?
I don't know for Ms. Pace. We can find out for the next meeting and get more information. We can see what she's planning on doing with drop boxes.
Yeah. Definitely seems like we should have as many as is reasonable to have.
And I don't know from the drop box standpoint, is it, and like I said, this would be a question for her and her electoral board, but, you know, does someone have to be there by a drop box? Is it something that has to be bolted down? Is it can you have a Dropbox, like a mobile van? You know, those are some of the things I'm not sure what the requirements are.
I had forwarded you that one article about the one county that was pretty much doing it countywide.
Yep.
Well, I think security would be a big problem.
And you brought up a good point with you talking about the people from the lake that have to vote at Antioch. I mean, they're only a mile to 2 miles away from your registrar's office. Right. They can just go by the registrar's office.
Yeah, right now, if there's someone that was, say, on the outer loop of Jefferson Drive, I mean, it's probably quicker for them just to go to the new registrar's office than it would be to go to Antioch. But, and there's other examples of that as well.
Right. And I know some communities are doing curbside voting as well, too.
I know there was some discussions by them, but I can't speak specifically on what their plan is for the voting process.
I have heard that the drop boxes would be in front of the registrar's office where they can be watched. Now, that's just something I've heard. I think dropping them off, drop boxes all over the county doesn't seem to be secure to me at all.
I would think you need two people
to watch each box. Where they can go out and get the ballots, whatever, and put them in a secure place, and they can watch somebody's there all the time. So I think that's going to be a question that we're not really sure about right now.
That makes sense.
Would the board be interested in a presentation from the registrar at the next meeting to discuss what type of preparations are happening for the next election?
Definitely.
Well, and the problem with the drop boxes is this: even at the registrar's office, you come by at 8 o'clock and drop it off. Nobody's going to be there at 8 o'clock.
No, the one thing about up there is certainly lots of security, but yeah, there's not necessarily someone standing right there.
If we do that, we might want to look into a security camera or some type of thing. Yeah.
Why couldn't they just take it inside?
Drop box is supposed to be attached to the wall or something.
Or push down like a mailbox.
Yeah, I mean, unless the board wanted to retrofit something where there was like, I mean, if you think of like a night drop. Thank you, Mariana. Like a bank has, like a night drop that is actually built into the facility. So if someone drops it in, the only way you can get into it is if you get into the facility. So
right. Good idea.
And he says he could answer that.
Oh, David Blount with the TJPC can answer some questions.
Okay, David.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
There's some legislation on this issue that's making its way through the General Assembly special session. At least what I'm reading, and this is not going to answer all of your questions, but hopefully it will be helpful. It looks like that the drop-off locations would be at the office of the registrar, any satellite offices that you may have set up, and then also on the day of election that there would be a drop-off location at each polling place. And then the language appears to then also give the registrar the flexibility to have additional drop-off locations where they deem necessary. And then there's a charge to the Department of Elections and the Board of Elections to come up with some guidance on this pretty quickly. Whenever this bill passes and takes effect, which it's actually on the fast track right now, they have to come up with that in 30 days, and maybe by this time. Next month, or as we're getting closer to the middle of October, there will be the final word.
Thank you. It would make sense to me that we have the electoral board report Ms. Pace present to us next time, because we want to stay in front of this, because the timeline is going to be so short.
Yeah, I'll get with Ms. Pace to have her or one of her electoral board members available for some sort of presentation, just outlining kind of what their plan is, and maybe some of this legislation will be moving forward by that point, and they'll have a better idea how they're, you know, what are some of the different means that they're going to be participating in for this next election.
Already. Are there any other comments or questions? All righty, do I have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors supplemental appropriation of $54,519 to the FY12 Registrar's Chair as elected.
21.
You said 20. I'm sorry, FY21 Registrar's Chair as elected.
All right, do I have a second?
Second.
Got a motion? Got a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Seeger. Ms. Seeger?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver? Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Second action matter is B, FY21 CARES Act budget transfer space utilization. Ms. Twisdale.
Good afternoon. We're here today to talk about the basement renovation. Quick recap, we're looking to renovate the basement for the Board of Supervisors meetings and additional meeting space since we aren't allowed to use the courts at this time. And the work room does not allow us room for social distancing.
There's a whole lot of noise online. Do you all hear that noise? Scratching? Maybe it's just me.
Might be my moon pie wrapper, Miss Bolton. I apologize. I'm done opening it now.
And static thing for y'all. Stay still over there. Stop moving so I can hear. Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I want to hear what you have to say. Okay, I'm done.
Okay, so after talking to the board at the last meeting, we went back to the engineering firm, and they have come back with an estimated cost for the entire renovation. The remediation, which would be mold, asbestos, anything that they found in the building that needed to be corrected, they're estimating around $20,000. Construction and audiovisual, that would be for the construction of the room as well as putting in the TVs, sound systems, everything they need to do there is $548,165.
And the 12-foot addition in the front, we'll have more pictures and stuff of what we're talking about here.
Furniture, and it's furniture, that's pretty straightforward. And then there's contingency built in because, as you know, with any kind of construction project, you always need some extra cushion there. The A&E costs we have already paid for, the board approved that last meeting. Including those costs, the total estimate is $731,802. Assuming that this is completed and we are able to occupy this prior to December 30th, this can be paid for by CARES funds.
So just one thing too before we, we are actually going to be putting the invitation for bid out tomorrow.
You already have all the paperwork and designs?
Yes.
Very good.
Yes, well, there's a few things to finish up. But
okay, no, it's fine. This is the design you saw last time. It had the wood fence across 15 where people could not pull in. We decided not to go with the switchbacks for the ramps because it was going to take too long and just be too expensive. So that's more of just a stairway, and they sawed in the section, and this is what you saw before. Now, Mr. Dole has added some additional drawings that he's going to talk to you about.
Yeah. So from some of the board's concerns last time, there was concerns about handicap accessibility and things like that down there. So we have a couple different slides showing a couple different options. And so we're anticipating to issue the invitation for bid tomorrow. And we've got some pretty tight language in there that we're planning on one final completion being done by December 11th. If they do not complete the project by December 11th, there would be liquidated damages every day thereafter. And then there's also some very strong language in there that if they don't finish it by December 30th, that the county could have recourse to go back to the contractor. Now, I think any contractor that sees some of that language, that may weed some contractors out from bidding on this. But I think any contractor that knows that they can get it done by then they would go forward with that. One thing that we were talking about is allowing like 24 hours a day for them to be able to work in that space. And we could segment off the basement space, locking the elevator, and then locking the stairwell going up to the administration building So that would allow them in after hours, if we wanted them to work 24 hours a day, or if they chose to do that, that would give them some additional flexibility to try and get the project done in time. So we'd want to list that in the IFB as well. So let me go back to the option. So again, we're just going to call this option A, which is what the board saw, you know, stairs and a sidewalk going down to the front, just the front area being grass. There's a little bit of a drainage issue in that area. So having some natural vegetation would probably be a good thing for that, but it's not the end all be all. Again, another thing that we had talked about was possibly having somewhat of a car drop-off space there that people could come. Now this does not address the issue specifically of someone, if they are handicapped, being able to park down there and get out. And we have another slide for that. So what this would do, if someone maybe has some type of mobility issues, and say they came with someone, this would allow them to, you know, for someone to pick them up there or drop them off, or if there was some type of emergency or something like that, they would be able to come out and there would be some space for them out there. And again, you know, we would just envision having this paved. This would be paved. Some of the benefit to this thing, to this kind of diagram too, and we may not have all that paved right there. We would have to get with our engineer. We may do some landscaping in there, or maybe make this kind of drop-off area, or I don't want to say it's a parking area. It really would be a drop-off area. But some of the benefit too for this is, if any type of equipment or anything would need to be serviced, you know, there's a space for service trucks to come in here, because we got lots of our HVAC equipment on there, or just anything of that nature. Also discussing if there's any type of emergency for fire and rescue or anything like that, it provides a space for them to come as well. So we'll call this option B for the front area. And then option C is, you could make two handicapped accessible parking spaces there, and you've got, you know, some of the accessibility issues. My concern with this, it certainly addresses some of the board's concerns about handicap accessibility. One, it's a tight space there to be able to do any type of maneuvering. I don't necessarily love the fact of someone pulling in there and say they pull out or back out too far, they're kind of getting close to the road. Another issue with having any type of handicap parking here is, during the day hours, I mean, no matter what we do, we'd have to have good signage to let them know, because that door is not going to be just wide open during the day. It will be wide open during any type of planning commission meetings, board meetings, anything else. But during the day, if someone that is handicapped comes to that area, it may create more of a burden for them to come there if the door is locked and then they get out, or we have signage that says call staff and staff can come down to assist you. But after going back to Josh Bauer with Crabtree Warbron Associates, with some of the spacing and size limitations, that is the best that they could do as far as having any type of handicap accessibility in that space there. So does the board have any thoughts on A, B, or C?
You've already spoken to concern C.
Yep.
My thought with B is, the concern there is, if you have three cars come in there and all of a sudden you got to back into somebody sticking out in 15, or you have somebody stopped in 15 waiting for other people to get out so they can pull out.
Yep.
That would be my only downfall with that.
Tonight. Yeah, it's 25 mile an hour zone.
You know, we all know that everybody drives
I'm just saying it is
35.
Yeah.
35 is near the bottom then. I mean, if you're gonna, what's A again? A is like
A is basically no access at all there. Anyone that is coming to the meeting is, you know, there.
You see the ramp in the front of the building. I mean, they would just use a ramp in the front of the building and come in and use the elevator.
Yeah, they would. I mean, like I said, A and B. Well, B allows someone, if they have some handicap accessibilities or just some mobility issues, you know, B allows someone to be dropped off to attend a board meeting if they're accompanying the meeting with someone. A really is, no matter what the need is, it really kind of makes them have to go through the front of the administration building. And really, this kind of just blocks that whole area off and landscapes it a little bit. So, like I said, if you want, I can come back to slides A, B, and C if you want, or we can discuss mm-hmm. that. We've got some internal renderings too, because we also address some of the board's concerns about, you know, where you're seated and kind of having someone kind of come out behind you a little bit too. We just there's really only one good option to go with that, but.
And these costs are not in the current.
You know, is Josh on?
I'm imagining so, the contingency.
There is a little bit of contingency in here, a little bit. I mean, yeah. I mean, so B may be a little bit more because you're dealing with some asphalt, but then you're eliminating some plantings and some other things. So one, the IFB and the initial estimate is kind of a high watermark. You know, like I said, he was.
Yeah, I'm on B. Remember when the fire department was there? Didn't we have a flashing orange light when they came out?
It was, yes, ma'am. There was a flashing orange light when they came out. Just because when they had a call, they could set that off.
Yeah.
And
like a school zone.
Right. The speed limit is 35 through there. It's not a fast speed.
You know, one thing that could always happen too, as Sheriff Hess stated previously, you know, he would still plan on having a deputy at the board meeting. If we had some type of drop-off area, maybe the deputy could park their squad car out in front in somewhere in that area as the meeting's going on to be a good presence.
Right across the street, they like.
Yeah. But again, that's just one thought. But again, we don't have a whole lot of options with that area. It's pretty limited. You know, our time frame's pretty limited at this point. So as it stands right now, you know, the board approved funding for the engineering. They've done a lot of the engineering. Now it's just, they've got all the interior engineering done. And now it's just kind of, we would put out an invitation for bid, and whatever type of change that the board wants to do with the exterior, we would just put a slight addendum out to the invitation for bid for whatever option the board goes with.
What do you think, Mr. Weaver?
So again, it is A.
You were there.
We had the first meeting.
That loop, what's the distance from the road to the end of the loop where you make that circle in there?
Not very much.
It's
maybe
probably
30 feet or 20 feet?
Calvin, do you have any idea what the
distance is? Coming to the distance. As far as 10 feet, it looks to be about 40 feet maybe.
40 feet? But
unless you're going to go to this.
That ought to be all right, that's 40 feet.
Yeah, I think it would be helpful for Mr. Weaver to see the, you know, to understand the conversation.
Move forward on some of the other stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, we can come back to A, B, and C. So again, this is the layout, the interior layout of it. And I'll show you some renderings too. So you remember, right here is where basically the old garage doors are. And so this whole front area is an addition. It's a 12-foot addition, and the renderings you'll kind of see better. But again, what this space is, you could have some type of doors that close off, so it creates additional meeting space. But during a larger meeting, these doors could open up and people could be sitting here because the board is sitting right there. So this area provides seating for 75 under optimal conditions.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And you can get additional seating for about 20 to 25 there. It creates a board of supervisors meeting. Well, it creates an additional meeting room and a board of supervisors closed session room during board of supervisors meetings. And then there's some existing facilities there. So this would be converting those facilities into a men's and women's restroom. And then again, you got the elevator going upstairs. And this whole room is actually a file room. So half the room turns into a more conditioned file room, and then you got the board of supervisors meeting room. Let me go to some of the next renderings here. So previously there was these little wall extensions that weren't there before, and this rendering doesn't show the actual depth of it, But coming from the wall out, it's, if I remember correctly, it's probably about 7 to 8 feet coming out from behind you, whereas before that wasn't there. And they also did a little bump out right here, so it allows you to kind of push back a little bit more. And then we had envisioned doing some type of more of a half moon circular desk. So when the board is meeting and discussing, you know, you can kind of get a good view of everyone there. To address Mr. Sheridan's concerns about those TVs off, seem awfully far away. So there's the option of having these TVs right there for the board to look at. Or if you go to the next one, there could be some TVs that pull down from the ceiling as well for you to be able to see. Or we can certainly look at having something up front and close, kind of like this as well. But those are just some thoughts. So,
like the one we had at the courtroom where it's in front of the podium.
Correct. And so to kind of address some of the board's concerns, we went back through numerous, probably three different options to try and change the configuration to kind of address some of that stuff, but you would lose on available seating by at least a dozen, if not more, for capacity in that area. So this is the best space to have the most capacity.
What's that, 75?
70, it's 75 in the main area, and then if you need to do any type of overflow in here, you could open up those kind of rooms up and provide additional seating, up to 20 to 25.
Now when we have a meeting, the only entrance, the one that's the one near the mortgage room, are you going to close the entrance below? Are you going to have someone there to see people, greet people at both entrances?
I'm sorry, Mrs. Booker, are you talking like during the day?
During the meeting.
Oh, during the meeting.
We talked about locking this side.
Well,
okay, we're going to
lock
the entrance.
To the left.
Everybody can do the
same one
at the top.
Yeah, I mean, I think whatever meeting you did, you may almost need to keep both doors open, possibly the front door to the admin building plus that, and we just have to get, you know, much better signage for the space. I mean, I don't necessarily know that. I mean, we could possibly lock this door for people to come down, but we couldn't lock the elevator.
Which door is that?
The elevator's to the right. We talked about shutting the one off to our left.
This one.
Yes.
You in theory could close that one off. You could have that closed during the meeting, and it would force people to take the elevator.
Or take the elevator. If they want to use steps, just come around, come down the steps on this side.
Yeah.
Be less headaches for the sheriff.
Well, and like I said, you know, too, depending on whether, because if you have an entrance here, you had people coming down there, you had people here, you know, maybe the sheriff deputy is sitting up front there to get a viewpoint of all areas, or I'm not sure, that's, we can let the sheriff's office figure that out, but like I said, to do what we need to do, we don't have a ton of options for configurations, and to provide the additional meeting space, provide, you know, like I said, we just don't have great spacing as it is right now, and just provide some social distancing. I mean, the new room would certainly be bigger, much bigger than this, and this is much better than it was in the Morris room, and that'll just add to it a little bit to provide more space. And then once we're back to whatever normal looks like, you know, it'll still have, you know, decent capacity for a lot of the more attended meetings.
And you can put security cameras in there as well, too.
Correct.
The sheriff could use security cameras.
We had even talked about, as it stands, trying to, you know, we'll get some security cameras in other buildings. We had talked about even getting some in, like, maybe some lobbies of the admin building. We could certainly do the same right in that area as well.
In this funding, are we including audiovisual equipment?
Yes.
So that we could actually broadcast the meetings on a regular basis?
We are. We would have more of a permanent audiovisual setup in place. And I don't have the necessary specs on that right now. Josh Bauer could help out with that with Crabtree. But yeah, we're envisioning this to be more of a really good flex space if we need to be. So it's not like we've got, you know, these big custom-built wooden wooden board of supervisors area that could be kind of modular and rearranged. It just provides, you know, some extra swing space. The planning commission could meet there, any other type of meetings that we have. You know, right now in the county, we're in a bit of a space dilemma right now with lots of different programs kind of wanting to even happen in a limited capacity. We're fighting for space as it is. So this provides that. It provides some conditioning and some fixes in that basement that are going to be, from the long term, needed too. And you know, when and if this becomes a court building, it's not like this is structured in such a way that it couldn't be utilized for something else when and if that time ever occurs.
Do we have the dimensions of that area? Is Mr. Hickman any?
Calvin? Do you have any idea, ballpark, on dimensions of that space down there of the garage, if you had to ballpark it?
I've got somebody going there right now to measure it, so I'll get the measurements.
Okay. Because I'm going to bet you the seating area is about the size of this.
From front to back?
From front to back. And once you take away the 15 feet that we're going to take away when you put in our chairs and everything else, just the sitting area for the 75 chairs.
I mean, again, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, and those are the big columns.
Right,
and
then you've got 5 rows of chairs, and you'd be able to put 5 rows of chairs from here to there. I'm going to bet you that this is pretty close to and similar to that area.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're at there and there, it's probably close to the same distance, and if you have that overflow and it opens up,
the overflow will add up.
And it's probably a little wider than this, so...
So, Mr. Weaver, the concern before we had those little wing walls there was people would be coming in and they'd be right there where the board supervisors are. So there was concern about
coming in from
noise, safety, those kinds of things. So that's why there was wing
walls. So it's these right here. Before, there was no wall there and there was no wall there. So if you came off the elevator, you'd come down. And then, you know, there's no wall here, so you're right there at the board. And same thing with the other side. You came down the stairs here, and if there's no wall here, you would kind of almost be, like if someone was coming in that door right there, would kind of almost be slightly to my back. But with this, it provides a little bit of a wall, a little bit of a barrier to kind of hopefully reduce noise. And, you know, we will certainly push and try and advertise that the main entrance for anyone that doesn't have a handicap accessibility would be coming through that kind of new vestibule entrance, and we try and get, you know, a lot of signage that pushes people that way. But, you know, we would certainly have to keep the front handicap door at least open for anyone that is handicap accessible.
We went with B, we have to keep that door open.
You would for the elevator, wouldn't you?
We'd have handicap entrance if we had B.
Yeah,
and if we did C, we wouldn't have much handicap. So, if you had
if you do C, then you only have two spaces, you still couldn't necessarily close the front if you only had the two spaces open.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, the only other option is to do some type of zigzag concrete, which from a time standpoint at this point. It's just not feasible. If the county wanted to do something about that at a later point, we possibly could. But in the time frame that we're looking at, and just from a cost standpoint, I just think it's a far reach in trying to get this done.
I think Mr. Bauer talked about using aluminum rather than concrete.
What's that?
I think he talked about using aluminum.
He was talking concrete. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So
you understand, Mr. Weaver?
So again,
you got a good job on it.
So again, the options are A, you know, just a kind of a standard, you know, landscaped, you know, front area with no entrance except for the sidewalk. B, allowing some type of drop-off area, and you know, which provides some additional functions, and then C. is providing some handicap spaces there, which would be a benefit, but I see some cons to it as well. So I would say that probably most staff, they felt like B was a good option to try and address some of the concerns, but still some functionality as well.
And my only thing is, I'm agreeing with you. I think B is probably the best one to do, because if, heaven forbid, we had to call rescue squad, they just pull right in that loop instead of having to worry about an elevator going up and down. But I would say, if possible, if the sheriff had anybody available, if we could have somebody out there just in case we had cars back up. You know, I'm not anticipating us to have eight cars lined up to drop somebody off, but if it rains, you never know.
No, it is certainly possible, and you know that.
If you could just have somebody there 20 minutes before the meeting, 30 minutes before the meeting.
No, it's. I think we could certainly do that.
You can make that a handicap drop off. That's not a drop off for everybody.
Yes, ma'am, but.
That's a drop off for handicap.
Totally agree, but every once in a while I go to some of the stores and I see people that aren't handicapped parking in those spaces.
You know, if it was raining, for instance, and you had two people that maybe didn't want to run out there, someone could go pick up the car and come and pick them up, and you're fairly close to the
whatever it may be.
I would assume A is covered in the original sort of.
It is.
So really, what we should do is say at least got cost. You know, we get cost estimate. Bids on that. You don't have to commit to it.
No, we don't. I mean, so what we could, I guess what we could do is we could have them finish the plans for B if that's the way the board wants to go. And if the cost is, you know, too much, you know, and I'm not sure how much more it's going to be, you know, there is some pavement that's already there. There would be some. It's not like they would have to, you know, I don't believe they would have to regrade things, but they would certainly have to recoat for sure.
I'm guessing it's about $15,000 in payment.
It's possibly, and like I said, with having the funding stream that's there, it maybe is a good use if you think B is a good option. But again, so this is kind of the outside rendering. This is just showing, we don't have a rendering for each of the options A, B, or C, because we have them try to pull those up, but this is kind of what the addition looks like on the front of the building right here, and that's kind of the roof line that we went with, kind of keeping it consistent with the rest of the building. And then you'd have like a little wider loop kind of coming in there if you went with B.
So B literally drops you off right there.
It does. It does.
Well, they still have a little bit of space there with concrete. So
yeah, this, I mean,
it's
this.
It's not going to drop you off at it, but you'll be 10, 15 feet from it.
What's the total distance?
Go back.
Go back to which one?
No, the grass.
Yep.
The grass. Between the end of the patio there to the
10
road.
Feet.
It's going to be more than that.
No, you're talking about from the grass section? My guess is 30.
30 feet, okay.
40 feet tops, but my guess would be 30, because they got 12 feet coming away from the building, an additional 12 feet. So that building right there is not the end of the building. You got to come 12 more, and then you got another 15 feet of concrete.
Well, that's what I mean, we're at the end of the patio there.
So yeah, let me go back to this other picture, because maybe you can see the better. Well, you know, if you're looking at this one here, so if this is a 12-foot build-out right here, you probably have another 12 feet right here. So then you probably have another 30 feet maybe, I'm guessing. And now if we wanted to somehow, you know, push the little bump out back a little bit to allow it a little bit more, maybe we could do that. But
my guess is going to be that when you tell them this is what we're wanting to do, they're going to move the sidewalk, go back to the grassy picture. Uh-huh. They're going to move the sidewalk down to the left a little bit and have to dig out more of that hill right there.
Yeah.
My guess is they're going to have to dig out more of that hill to do that. Mm-hmm. And the exit will basically almost be like just going right around the wood that we have there. Uh-huh. You could almost leave the wood there and just go in on one side of it, come out on the other.
Yeah.
So the awning or the covering there is coming out from the edge of the balloon to.
It does. It comes out to these would those, be the column. Okay. So you're coming out probably about 6 feet. So you've got a covered space. It provides some shielding from the sun for that room and stuff. So it provides a little cover from the elements.
Okay. Eric, how much flexibility do we have in the financing on that right now? How close are you to reaching the maximum amount you can spend?
If the board goes with this, we still have Liz.
Liz has got the memo.
What's the memo? How much do we have left?
Like a couple million.
Yeah, there's some.
Okay, oh well. Yeah, so if I'm living. Yeah, right.
Yeah. I think
2.2, I think, what you
said.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what it's.
I think we had 2.2 last time, so if you approve this 700, I think it's roughly 658, because 68,000 was already approved. You're still on 1.7 million left.
I didn't realize it was that much.
Yep.
We got another. We got another one.
Oh, you got another appropriation?
Additional 2.0.
Oh, is that all?
Yes.
Okay.
We're waiting on third.
Yeah, I would love to see that, but we're struggling to do what we're doing.
Are we going to make a decision on A, B, and C this evening?
We need to, yes,
so
ma'am.
We can move forward?
Yes.
We need to tonight so they can move forward. Now, I have one last question off of Ms. Twistdale's statement. Listening to you talk at the very beginning. If this goes past December 30th, we're paying for it.
It's on our dime, the whole thing.
The county is on the hook, so that's why we will have very strong language.
We're having a very unusual provision in the RFP that makes time of the essence and liquidated damages are equal to whatever they get paid, we have to pay back. That's a very unusual provision, but I think it's not unreasonable.
Yeah, I mean, I think under the circumstances, I think anyone that's going
to
bid on this,
they're
going to be 100% confident that they can finish this project in time, and if we allow them to have a 24-hour accessibility to the space, they should be able to do that if they're a company of maybe a little bit larger company or has the staff
to
do it.
Well, here's my only question about that.
Yep.
I don't think we have a house very close across the road. I think we have trees and woods that would separate.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to all of a sudden make this a headache for everybody that lives around.
No, I would agree. And maybe once the building was closed in, once the space was closed in and they're working indoors, that may be a different scenario. Or maybe we just say, look, if you're doing...
There's going to be construction traffic. That's the way construction is.
But were you limited to like the daylight hours or anything?
This is not a residential area.
Yeah.
This is a major highway and commercial.
Well, on that side. And that's what saves us, is on that side of the building.
Right.
What about, do we need to got approved?
No.
Yeah.
Nope. It's an existing.
If we have an entrance there, we're going to need to got approved. But I assume that.
There's already
an entrance there. And to answer the question, Mr. Hickling got the information. So the basement is 36 by 40 feet.
Then it's a little bit bigger this way and not as big that way because we're looking at 60 this way.
That's a pretty good basement.
So you're going to about that, about where Doug is sitting for 40. Maybe to the flag. It's going to be pretty close to that.
And then you've got the overflow area. That doesn't include the addition piece.
Those are
2-foot
tiles.
Calvin, how big are those tiles?
18.
18?
Yeah, 24 of them, so.
36. So you're looking from here to there and about to duck.
Which you could take a bid at about any price, couldn't you? I mean, with the money, the flexibility. I mean, if somebody gets high, you can still take it.
Yes, sir.
It's not like we only have this pot.
All right,
that's the way to do business.
One other question would be, so that, let's say you've got AB construction, all those expenditures, they can't actually put those in until the job is done. Imagine you can, how does that work? If you purchased it, there's some installation charges. They would be responsible for the installation charges, but not the equipment charges at that point in time.
You mean if we're not done?
Well, so in other words, the AV guys can't come in and do their job, flooring guys can't come in, in other words, you might have a bunch of...
So if we have the equipment purchased and it's in our building...
It has to be complete and you have to be in it and using it.
Now what is, but isn't there any...
Now, there is a stipulation that you don't have, in other words, you don't have to pay for it by December 30th.
But isn't there a stipulation if you purchase equipment and as long as you have it by December 30th?
I see what you're saying. Even if they haven't installed it, as long as we have it.
I think as long as you're able to use the room.
Right.
Now, if you then have to pay them to install it afterwards, you're going to have to pay that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But as long as you're able to move in and hold a meeting in the room, if you've bought the equipment, but they haven't, like if you mean they haven't hung the TVs or
right.
Yeah, then we could pay. We would have.
And you're not allowed to, like, say, put down, you know, purchase all equipment and 50% labor up front.
No.
You can purchase all equipment and then
as long as it's part of the contract.
Yeah.
If it's part of the contract and the contract is complete,
right.
You're okay.
Yeah.
They say.
Okay. Yep. So again,
we have to have a meeting December 31st.
December 11th meeting.
Our plan is to have the second meeting of December in the new space.
Hopefully the first.
I have a question. We're going out for bid on this, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So is it going to be more than what we have on the screen? How do we know it's going to be that much?
We don't. That's kind of the engineer's best, the engineer and architect's best estimate.
That's the engineer. Yep. Okay, so it's supposed to come. Well, we make that decision then.
Well, yeah, once we get all the bids back.
I like B. Have we vetted this enough? I like B. What, do we need anything else?
Ms. Ager, what do you think?
Motion, Mrs. Booker?
I was wondering if I would, Ms. Ager, I mean, can I do that? Do you have a motion made?
I got a motion.
I think we would just have to go on the fly with the option really quick. But we got the dollars there.
Ms. Ager, does B look good to you, ma'am?
Yes.
Sure.
Yes. All right.
Go ahead, Ms. Booker, as soon as he brings a motion up.
Oops, hold on, sorry.
Yeah, make motion.
Yep.
Okay.
Go ahead, Ms. Booker.
Is this the motion?
Yes, ma'am.
Make the motion, and then I'll...
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve a budget transfer of $663,592 from the FY21 CARES Act contingency line to the following fiscal year 21 CARES Act line to complete the administration building basement renovation. Contract services, remediation, $20,000. Construction and audio visual, $548,165. Furniture, board and conference room furniture, $45,500. Contingency,
$49,927. I'd like to second that.
Motion's made by Ms. Booker, second. Yes, sir.
On the finances, again, I assume there'll be some contingency. In other words, what if they go over what we have, how we handle that.
So here's what's going to happen. So once we get all the bids back, we're going to have to come back. Once we get all the bids back on this, we're going to have to come back to the board, and the board's going to have to approve whatever that contract is. So we're going to know what the exact amounts are at that point.
Okay.
All
right. So we got a motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Ms. Ager. Ms. Ager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
And Mr. Chair, and maybe if we could just get a quick vote from someone that says, I move the Board of Supervisors approve option A, B, or C for the schematic.
Option B.
For the exterior.
Yeah, because we've all kind of agreed on option B.
Fred, is that necessary?
I think that's a good idea. Sure.
I think it's sufficient.
And we've all nodded on B.
Okay. On the record, I heard everybody say that the preferred option B.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I thought that was B.
Okay. Yeah. That's what we're discussing. Fred's agreeing with us. We've already agreed on it. All righty. So now we'll move forward with the third action matter. C, ratify advertisement to hold a public hearing on an ordinance amendment to reduce the penalty for late payments on taxes on tangible personal property. Mr. Dahl.
Yep, I don't have a presentation for this. I've got the ordinance. So if the board remembers during budget season, it was requested by the board to go back and take a look at reducing the 25% penalty. As it stands right now for real estate and personal property taxes, day one when you're late, you're automatically at a 10% late fee. What's that?
First month or something.
Yep, first day, we're doing one in 30 days. On personal property, after 30 days, it goes up to 25%. So this basically eliminates the 25% fee. So moving forward, anyone that's late for real estate or personal property, it's just the 10%. We had to get this motion, we had to get the advertisement out due to some time issues. Ms. Lenher and her office are trying to get the bills done by September 21st. And in order to accommodate that and have the public hearing on September 16th, we had to get an advertisement in the paper. And the board had discussed this before that they wanted to move in that direction. So that's the motion there. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
And I believe we were the highest by far of anyone around, because I think everybody else was 10%.
Correct.
Across the board.
Yep.
So that's what we talked about before. Does anybody have a question? Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors ratify a public hearing advertisement to be held on September 16, 2020, in order to receive public comment on a proposed amendment of Section 20-1-2.1 of the Savannah County Code as running on September 3rd and 10th, 2020.
Second. Motion's made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Seeger?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passed 5-0. All right. Now, there are no appointments, so now we'll go with presentations. D, Regional Legislative Programs. Mr. Blunt?
Yes, good afternoon again, Mr. Chairman, the members of the board. Am I coming through okay?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
All right, great. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I appreciate you giving me some time on your agenda tonight. I just wanted to give you a brief update on what's going on with the special session in Richmond, and then also talk for a minute or two about the regional legislative program that I'll be putting together. A lot of attention, as you know, on budgets, on fallout or impacts of COVID, and also police and criminal justice reform. Those are the three reasons that the General Assembly has gathered again. So far, they've been doing a lot of work with legislation, a lot of work on police bills having to do with training and standards for law enforcement, activities that are prohibited, data reporting, civilian review boards. So there's a whole lot of legislation. I think a lot of the items related to COVID, even though there have been pretty high-profile bills related to rent relief and utility shutoff relief, a lot of that I think is going to be addressed in the budget. They haven't really gotten to talking about the budget much yet in public, so those talks are kind of going slowly, and I don't know really what their path is moving forward to get to an agreement on the budget, because they didn't really establish any rules for how they were going to operate during this special session. We do think that they probably will not be dipping into reserves. You'll remember that back in the spring, the General Assembly froze at the governor's request a lot of the new funding that had been approved back in March, just really 1 month before. And then that funding was used to really just kind of close the budget gap in large part that they're anticipating for the rest of your budget cycle. I think they will try to put any dollars that they can towards K-12 education, certainly health and mental health as it relates to COVID impacts, and than whatever police and criminal and social justice reforms may pass. They will probably need some funding for that as well. So you all have just been spending a lot of time talking about CARES Act funding. They do have, at least to my knowledge, reported by the money committees within the last week or 10 days, the state still has $1.3 billion in the state's coronavirus relief funding that has not been allocated. So I'm looking to see if the money committees are going to use some of that money, you know, where they can, you know, for programs that would be eligible for it to be used, such as housing, such as broadband, such as childcare. So I will, you know, continue to keep you posted in the legislative updates as things unfold during the special session. Really no timetable for when they're going to get done. Rumor is maybe by the middle of this month, but they've got a lot to do in the next 2.5 weeks. That's going to happen. So that's the special session. I did want to tell you, we are moving forward with putting together, as we do every year, a regional legislative program. I think given everything that we've been going through the past 5 to 6 months, with and knowing that the General Assembly is in special session before we can turn around, we'll be back in session again in January, that I'm going to take an opportunity to have the legislative program really focus on just maybe three top priority items that we really think are important, particularly in these times. Certainly, those are going to largely revolve around funding items. You know, unfunded mandates and not passing those on, funding what you've obligated yourselves to fund, like K-12 education, not just catching up from where we've been lagging in the past, but also new demands that we're seeing on schools and teachers and students in this different learning environment that we have. And then certainly, I know you all are in fairly good shape with your partnership with CVAC on the broadband front, but there certainly still is a big need across the rest of the region. And really, I think that the necessity of broadband has a big old exclamation point on it right now, given where we've been, you know, with the new demands for distance learning and telemedicine and telework. So I'm thinking that I will propose those three priority items to you all, but certainly I want to get any feedback you all may have on this evening. And certainly, you know, as I bring legislative program to you a little bit later in the fall, we'll continue to have our legislative positions on a variety of issues, but again, just want to really kind of focus in on a smaller list of top priorities for the 2021 session. So that's what I wanted to bring to your attention this afternoon, Mr. Chairman, and I'm glad to take any comments or try to answer any questions you may have.
Are there any questions? Ms. Booker, Ms. Eager?
I don't have any questions.
The only thing I think that this COVID-19 has really shown us about broadband, the need for it. Because, you know, this virtual learning is going to continue because there are some students who will want to do or be asked to do a distant learning, and it limits certain students from benefiting from that if they do not have the internet Wi-Fi situation. So broadband is a real urgency. People, you know, if you talk to people have some real stories to tell about even why they can't even use their telephone. And so I hope that some money is going to go in that direction. And thank you, Mr. Blount, for that. I think that's a good three things that we can narrow it down and put some emphasis on.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Brien?
I just blanked out on one of the items. Can you just repeat the three, just bullet list them real quickly?
Yeah, I think our funding position you know, overall state funding for programs that, are implemented at the local level. You know, and again, within that, you know, not wanting unfunded or underfunded mandates. Second then would be the public education funding position, and then the broadband.
Was the unfunded mandates that we're going to join in?
Yeah. Mr. Weaver? All right, I've got one question, Mr. Blunt. This one's kind of close to me. I know that there was a bill put in, I can't tell you whether it was House or Senate, asking to remove SROs. Do you know how it's going with that?
I don't believe that bill has gone anywhere. I don't believe it's even been heard. So I will follow up on that just to make sure that I'm telling you the right thing, and we'll shoot you an email just to
Appreciate it, Mr. Blunt, because I saw some of the other stuff that you've written, read it the other day. So thank you for all that you do, and please keep an eye for our law enforcement as well. Mr. Dahl?
Mr. Blunt, is there anything out there to offset, you know, obviously, you know, we're talking unfunded mandates and in funding for counties. How about the cost and the additional cost of the early voting?
I guess to go back to, you know, some of your previous discussion, you probably saw that the governor put in $2 million to reimburse the counties for providing prepaid postage for absentee ballots that would be mailed in. But, that was a push that we made really hard during the 2020 regular session, you know, knowing that they were extending their early voting for 45 days and we did not get any state general funds for that. I believe there's some federal HABA money that's flowing through the state, but I think it, Ms. Pace could tell you more, but I believe it has some limited application in terms of how it can be used. But nothing beyond that $2 million proposed in this budget that you released in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Mr. Blunt. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you all. Have a good evening.
You too, sir. Next up is E. Virginia Department of Health, Thomas Shelston Health District COVID-19 Pandemic Metrics, Ryan McKay, MPA, Senior Policy Analyst.
Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you a little bit about where we are as a state, region, and at the local level in terms of COVID-19 and the pandemic. I'll give some brief information about the new pandemic metrics that Virginia Department of Health put out last month. And then we continue to share with Mr. Dahl. And then we'll really break down what we've been seeing so far in our district, but more specifically with Lugana County, and then some information about what we've done for the response up to date and just some key messages for the future. And you go ahead, next slide, please. So this is really the beginning of what BDH has been putting out in terms of a general snapshot of the extent of transmission throughout the Commonwealth. And you can see by the color coding, the darker the numbers, the higher the transmission rate. What we have noticed from last week to this week is that overall the trend in each of these regions has been going downward. And you can see we're in the Northwest region. It's an extremely large region, but we are currently around the moderate transmission status. Northern Virginia in the top right, which is the largest, I'm sorry, the lightest color, is actually trending downward so that they're at low transmission. And then Eastern region, where the arrow is on the far right, they actually went to some phase two measures back at the end of July by implementing those. They moved downward in their transmission extent, which is a good thing. But across the state overall, we've seen a trend downward in some of our metrics, which gives us some optimism about moving forward. Next slide, please. This slide gives a little bit more detail, and again, we're on the northwest side, so we're moderate burden and moderate community transmission. How they determine this is they look at case counts on a daily basis. They look at sort of the healthcare infrastructure, so what is the bed capacity, ICU and acute care capacity, how many people are going to emergency departments with COVID-like symptoms, and they sort of weight all of those and measure those to determine what the regional status is. This is sort of a starting point for us at the local health department and certainly at the regional level of what are we seeing regionally, how does that impact us at our level, and then are we implementing the right mitigation strategies to ensure that spread is happening at a slower rate and that we're able to contain spread over the long term. Next slide, please. On this slide, this gives us a little more detail about where we are as a region. So as you saw in that first slide, we have a very large region, but this really gives us some pinpoint data on where we are within that range. So you can see we're at an 8.9, which is on the very low side of moderate community transmission and moderate burden. And what BDH has done is evaluated that this is really fluctuating at this point. So from one day to the next, we're going to see variation in case counts, the percentage of people who are testing positive overall, and then what we're seeing in our hospitals in terms of those that need to be hospitalized and the ED visits. We look at this weekly. If that number 8.9 is going to change from one week to the next, but what we're looking for are the larger trends. What are we seeing over the course of time so that we can make decisions about forward planning and making sure we're positioned to respond accordingly. Next slide, please. Here we get more into the detail of our local health district pressures. These snapshots here are from our health data portal, which you can find on our website, and it's the one right there. We've been tracking a lot of different information over time, but I think some of these are more important for local and certainly planning within Fluvanna County. So you can see at the top, Fluvanna so far since the beginning of March, really, 226 total cases, 35 hospitalizations, 9 fatalities. At the bottom here are the total number of tests. These are the PCR tests that are done. So these tests determine at that moment that you have the specimen collected whether or not you test positive. And our positivity rate as of Monday was 6.6%. And as you can see by that yellow line, which is the rolling 7-day average, it fluctuates day to day. So we look at this as one aspect of our determination in terms of where we are with community spread, but it's not the only thing that we look at. Early on, we were testing very few people just because there was a lack of availability. So you can see that there was that large yellow spike up there around March 30th. And over time, we've been able to level up a little bit, but we've ranged anywhere from the 4% range up to 9% since March. Next slide, please. Here, we're breaking things down a little bit more by demographic. Similarly to what we've seen in the Commonwealth and across the country, there are some disproportionate number of cases and percentage of cases among people of color, Latin, Black, and African Americans. And so what we've tried to do in a lot of the situations is provide greater access to testing, which is sort of a key in terms of early detection, isolating those who are sick, and then trying to work on quarantine for those that were potentially exposed. Age group has shifted a little bit. So early on, we saw a higher percentage of older Americans or older residents here testing positive. This was very early in the pandemic, where we had outbreaks within long-term care facilities, including in Fluvanna, where high percentages of individuals were not only getting COVID due to transmission within those facilities, but also hospitalizations and, unfortunately, fatalities. That has trended downward, so the majority of cases that we're getting now are among individuals in their 20s and 30s. So we're working on and successfully protecting a lot of older adults, particularly those in long-term care facilities, but as many of us return to work, increase our social gatherings, we're seeing higher percentages among those who are in their 20s and 30s. And you can see here, children in adolescents and teens make up a much smaller percentage. I think a lot of that has to do with schools having gone virtual since March and April. Nationally, we've seen an uptick in terms of their exposures and case counts, but hopefully we'll head in that same 4% range for children under 9 and somewhere around 11 or 12 for adolescents and teenagers. Next slide, please. Now, here are some very specific metrics for Fluvanna County. On the left is sort of the raw data. You can see where we've been since August 17th until now. The positivity rate, meaning the percentage of people who test positive for Fluvanna County, has dropped from 5% to 3.9. It's a very great number to be at that allows us to quickly identify those who do test positive, identify those who need to quarantine for 14 days because they were exposed, and really contain any sort of further spread from there. On the right, there are some different numbers and graphs. The graphs in the middle of the line bar, that's just the average over time. I tried to put some markings there for where we are at August 17th and where we are now, just in terms of giving you a reference point. Those gray dots on the right represent trend. So how many days in a row have we been increasing in any of these measures, and how many days in a row have we been decreasing? While we'd like to see arrows going down, those fluctuating gray circles give us some optimism about where we're heading with the disease in Fluvanna County. On the left-hand side, you can see the burden, which basically means how much of this is happening in the community. I can actually say those numbers are updated daily. So the percent positivity rate today, I think it's dropped even further below 3.5%. And then the cases per day is actually around 4. So all that to say, there's a lot of fluctuation. There's a lot of variability. And it's a little difficult to look at trends on a single day. So we're trying to look at these on a weekly basis to see where things are heading to, as we move forward. Next slide, please. So over the last several months, we've built a community testing team that operates in each of our localities. Initially, it was made up of our own health district staff. You can see there our first site in the health district did happen in Fort Union on April 25th. And we've continued to provide at least 2 community testing events per month in each of our localities. And as Mr. Dalt mentioned and publicized, which is great, is that on September 15th, we'll be in Palmyra for another testing event. We've increased capacity at these events so that we can provide more access. And then we've actually opened up those 25 slots for walk-ins as needed. Testing is really key. If we can't identify those who have tested positive and have COVID, it's really nearly impossible for us to contain the spread. So we will continue the testing. We're hiring a second testing team as we speak to give us more capacity. And then what we do know is that private providers, urgent care centers in the area are also providing access to that testing. So we feel really good about that. Turnaround times for testing have improved. Within our own state lab, it's now 3 to 4 days, where before it could have been 5 to 6. And we know that local labs, University of Virginia or Sentara, have been able to turn results around in about 48 hours, maybe 72, depending on the day. And commercial labs are also turning those around as well. Next slide, please. So part of the key to minimizing spread is really the use of face masks and face coverings. We can save lives, we can protect ourselves a little bit, but more importantly, we're protecting others. And access to those face coverings may have been really challenging to begin with. They're in high demand, there's an expense to those. And so we really worked to locate funding and partners who could help distribute face coverings throughout the district. And here is information about who we worked with in Fluvanna County and the number of face coverings that we've been able to distribute for those that are there. This is really critical. The face coverings that we've distributed are useful, they're washable. And so it's a really important aspect of giving people the opportunity to contribute to protecting the public health, minimizing the spread within the community. And then along with this, we're about to hire a care resource coordinator. So what that individual can do is work with people who test positive and may not have great access to resources if they need to isolate for 10 days, if they have to quarantine for 14, particularly with difficulties paying for bills, access to food. That individual can probably link those who test positive or quarantine to those resources to give them support during that time that they're not able to work. Next slide. So some summary messages. This continues to evolve. We learn new things about the disease. We are moving quickly to respond to more cases that emerge in any locality that we have. We're working with a number of partners in each of our localities to make sure that we're moving in the right direction and people are informed. There is a vaccine on the way. So there are several of those going through phase 3 trials right now. It's going to take time for those to come out to make sure that they're safe, that they're effective. We are already working with DEH to develop plans on how we will distribute, dispense, and administer those vaccines throughout the health district. We're moving pretty quickly to get something submitted by November 1st. It's moving fast, but we just want to make sure that we're ready as soon as that vaccine comes out. There will continue to be spread. There will be ebbs and flows, peaks and valleys. I think the important thing for everyone to remember is that we can be vigilant about this, keeping our distance, limiting social gatherings, wearing face coverings, and then isolating and quarantining from big where we've been exposed. We'll continue to provide open communication. We'll continue to share the metrics with Mr. Dahl. And we also continue to share those with the school district as well, just to make sure they have that information so that they can be informed about how to proceed if and when we make a decision about going in person. And then finally, you can see that there's a link there for continued updates about what VDH is working on. Welcome your questions and certainly welcome future opportunities to provide updates.
Do you have any demographics on the people that have taken the tests?
No, we don't have demographics on who has actually taken the test.
And 538 people over the course of 4 months is less than 3% of the population. And of course, the test is only good for that particular point of time. What would Lumana do to increase the number of people that are being tested, if you would?
That's a good question, thank you. I will clarify that those the number of tests there that we share is just through our community events, where I don't have exact data on the total number of people who are tested for Granite County, but it is more than that 538, because we track through our surveillance system. When a case comes back positive or negative, we can see where individuals live when they get tested. So we can try to find that data and share that through Mr. Dahl, and he can share that with the board.
That would be good, because I know, like, I forget how many positive cases there were total, but I believe the one that was in Kent's store was one that had previously tested positive and came back to be retested again. Am I correct on that, Mr. Dahl? Do you remember that? I think that.
You might have to ask
Ms. Harris. Ms. Harris is nodding yes.
I'm pretty sure that's what I remember.
I'm pretty sure that we were told that, because I asked.
Yep.
And they said, well, that was a person that had previously tested positive, was retested again, and was still positive.
Yep.
That will happen if people get tested within 3 months of the original positive test, even though individuals recover, aren't symptomatic or aren't shedding the virus or infecting others. What we found is that a test can detect the virus, given the sensitivity of the test, for up to 3 months after. So that's part of why that may have happened for that individual. And we've seen that where people trying to get back into long-term care facilities will test positive for several weeks because they need 2 negative tests before they can go back in. And it's just sort of the nature of how long the virus lives in the individual, even though they're not infectious.
And do you have any kind of sense as to, or in tracking the, I don't know, obviously this is hard to do, but the level of people that are wearing face coverings versus not wearing face coverings week over week? I don't know how you would do that.
That's a difficult thing to track, because it's one little snapshot at any given time. We do have a system through Virginia Department of Health where we get information, complaints, I guess is the best word, about where in public spaces, particularly indoors, people have seen lack of face coverings. I can only speak anecdotally about those, but I think given the low number of cases in Fluvanna, and that we're not seeing outbreaks in Fluvanna where at least two individuals have some sort of epidemiological connection. The face mask wearing is likely at a pretty high rate.
I think that a lot of businesses are now putting up signs and not serving people who are not masked. I keep the Virginia Department of Health number in my phone. If I go to a business here and where I live and I see two and three and four people not masked, I call them. I call and record it. And I think, and I don't know whether it helps or not, but I'm protecting myself and my neighbors. But I do see more people wearing a mask now than at Walmart. They're really crap now. And which is feel safer, you know, when people have on the mask. So I think other people are cooperating and trying to have people to realize that these masks are important.
Walmart's mandated, you know.
One last question. I know at the sort of beginning there was a lot of talk about the transmission, you know, and people who were wearing gloves. Of course, that doesn't seem to be talked about or advertised. Is that just changed the nature of wearing gloves that it's not considered as high as a risk?
Yeah, we found that transmission is primarily going to occur through the respiratory droplets. So when someone talks, even when there's a cough or a sneeze, so the face covering is far more effective. Now, it is possible that transmission occurs by touching something and then touching your eyes, touching your mouth or nose. But the thing about gloves is that if you continually touch different things, if you don't take them off properly or then touch other things, you're potentially creating other opportunities for exposure. So the recommendation is rather than wear gloves, it's just frequent hand washing and frequent maintenance personal hygiene to limit transmission.
I snickered, I wasn't laughing at anybody, but I've seen a variety of gloves. I've seen plastic gloves, I've seen farm gloves, I've seen cloth gloves. So
sure.
All right, thank you very much. And I think the idea about if you can get us a total number tested for Fluvanna, since y'all have access to be able to give us those numbers, that would be great. So we can look at total number tested to that 226 that are positive.
Yes, happy to do that. Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right. Now we'll move forward with the consent agenda. First is F, minutes of August 19th, 2020, Ms. Solis. G, FY21, REPP, Radiological Emergency Preparedness Program grant application, Ms. Smith. Is there anything we want to pull? I saw you turn the page, Mr. Wheaton.
Yeah, I'm a little slow here.
No.
Naturally, I wasn't here in the last minute, so
yes, sir.
I'll just stay on that. The rest of it.
We're good?
Yeah.
All right, do we have a motion?
So made.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Yeah, motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Wheeler? You have a saying? Yes, sir. Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0-1 with Mr. Weaver abstaining. All right, next comes unfinished business. H, youth outdoor gym program proposal, Mr. Spitzer.
Good evening, how are you doing?
Doing well, how are you, Mr. Spitzer?
I'm doing great. So I'm here to re-propose my outdoor gym program let's get into it, because I kind of changed some age groups because I heard some questions about the younger kids. So Mr. Weaver was here. I'll go through the whole presentation for him, if that's okay. So on August 12th, the school board voted to keep school facilities closed and implement 100% K-12 virtual instruction until at least November 2nd. With this decision, it's 50% capacity indoors is not recommended for people. So that's why we're trying to be outside. We're programming outside. Parks and Recreation would like to offer a free all outdoor gym program geared towards. This is where it gets a little different. First through eighth grade levels or third through 10th grade levels from September 14th instead of the 8th until October 29th. We moved the date back because of trying to hire people and get everything figured out. And we moved the grade levels because I think last time there was some concern about first and second graders, like the little younger kids, so we tried to maybe remove them and put a little older kids in there. Do you want me to do it?
No, I got it.
Okay.
It's just picky.
So the program participants, like I said, we can take 100 children. And in the next slide, I will show you how we can do that comfortably, we think. So we can take 100 children. The grades are, you know, it depends on which the board would prefer, if they prefer any. The stations, we're going to go 8x8 spots with 6 foot in between each 8x8 spot per kid. This can be accomplished on the football field and track at the Savannah County High School, which we have been given permission to use. And we don't need to figure out the rodeo part. So the activities we'd like to do will stretch the entire program all together. And then we, as instructors, will move and the participants will not. So they will stay in zone 1, zone 2, zone 3, or zone 4, where we put them. And they won't move from one zone to the other. Our instructors will. That way, kids are limited to where they're actually going to make it safer. When we do go from, say, the track back to our calisthenics, we'll require them to wear a mask to get back. So when we're walking around, people wear masks up. We're not going to just let them not wear masks. We want to do walking, calisthenics, maybe yoga, and mental exercises is our plan. So this is a new slide. So I laid out the football field at the high school. At the top, it'll tell you, I'm sure you know, but 3 feet equals 1 yard. So we have about 15 yards in between each zone. So that's 45 feet, way more than the 6 feet that is being asked to serve for your distance. We could get 63 feet long. That's 5 feet. That's 5 children from the end zone to, like, say, the 10-yard line. And then we'll go 5 feet out from sideline to sideline, if that makes sense. And our instructors will move from one zone to the other to instruct the kids in the different activities. That way the kids will not be moving through zone 1 to zone 2. That way they're in their one zone for that day. Much more safe, we think. Any questions on that? So the next two slides are possible ways we're going to drop kids off at the high school. This is something Mr. Morrison, myself, and the school will get to. The first one is using the main entrance, coming down, going around, dropping off the football field, coming out. I am proposing number 2, which would be using the bus route, because buses are not going to be running because we're all virtual. So that may limit how many people are going through the main entrance. I'm not sure if that's something they'll want to do. But those are our two options to be able to get people in and out.
I was just going to say, option 1 is how they do drop off and pick up in the afternoons.
Yeah. So that's why I'm trying to give them two options, you know, either way. But we're willing to work with them on that type, you know, that type of stuff. The next would be our grade schedules. So the first one is for first through eighth grade. Every kid gets 2 hours. Every grade gets 2 hours once a week. So, like, say first grade will be in the morning, fifth grade will be in the afternoon. And if you would do the third through 10th grade, third grade will be Monday mornings and not two Wednesday mornings now. So we'll just move everything a little bit. The next slide shows that's third through 10th grade, how we just kind of shifted a little bit. So for this, we'll need 5 to 6 employees to run the program. two to three of us will be full-time staff, checking in people, running the program. We like to hire two to five part-time in case somebody would need a day off or something. We would have somebody to fill in. No additional funds. We already have the funds in our budget to do this. And I think that was the last slide, if I'm not mistaken. Nope, our guidelines. So our guidelines, when somebody would come and get dropped off, they would do a temperature check before they even went in the gated area to the facility. A mask would be worn while they're from the car to their spot. When they get to the spot, we will let them take it off, but when they move from their spot, they must put that mask back on. Each child will get a 1 8x8 location. Parents, we're not going to let them come in the facility. We're trying to keep it all kids, so we're less people in there. They have to pre-register through rec desk, so that way we'll know, we will not take walk-ins. You know, we'll know who's coming so we can have everybody laid out before they get there. We're not going to supply water or a mat or anything. The children need to bring their own. That way we're limited. We will have water in case a kid needs water, but we're not going to supply, you know what I'm saying? We want them to have their own equipment, so that's less that we have to deal with transferring anything. And then if the children can't stay in their 8x8 area or abide by our guidelines on the track, we will put them in an area to the side, call their parents, and come pick them up immediately. We can't have them messing around and trying to do something that we don't feel safe. Is there any questions?
Can the school furnish maybe some personnel to help?
I don't think so. I cannot answer that, but I do not think so. I think it's going to be a totally Parks and Rec program.
Okay. Yeah, the schools, you know, like I said, the Savannah County Schools will allow us to use the high school football turf field in the track area. It'll be a little better use since it's, you don't have to worry about, you know, mud and if it's been raining or anything like that. So it's, you don't have to worry about just the wet grass.
Just one food for thought. If this is approved, if it's above 90, they tell us we're not allowed to practice on it.
We should be okay coming September.
I'm hoping that we're okay, but I'm just saying, I would ask Mr. Morris if you could use the practice football field, because just in 90, it probably won't be very muddy. Just in case, because that turf will get hotter than
me. Yeah, we're going to go over every guidelines and everything. We're going to clean the bathrooms for them. We're going to open bathrooms for the kids outside. So we will definitely work with them and do what we can. Like I told them, we always try to leave the place better than we found it. So.
And my last thing, I'll still go back to, and I know you talked about how you had the money in your budget, but the only reason you're offering this program is because of COVID. And to me, I don't know, and I missed Twistale last time, if we can use that money to cover this expense.
It's a good time.
Well, I mean, like I said, the absolute only reason he's doing this is because of COVID. I wish it was me running around with him.
No, it makes complete sense. We're still working on that.
We kind of looked at it, I think.
Yeah, we did.
Okay. All right, that just to me.
Well, it sure is. You're right about that.
And yeah. Would like to state, we're not making anybody sign up for a program. You know, it's totally up to them if they want to come out. But I've had a lot of support from the people I talked to about it, so.
My second question would be this. When you've done your programs in the past, do you have more kids that are in the first and second grade age group coming, or do you have more kids in the ninth and tenth grade?
So we have programmed the summer for kids 6 to 14, if that helps you. We have some 6, 7, 8, not many.
I'm just trying to figure out.
More 9 to 13. We have more 9 to 13. But we did cat classes. Mm-hmm. We've done water gun blast fights, where, you know, we can social distance and that type of stuff. We've done heights. We've done disc golf. We've done disc golf. So we've been programming outdoors for 2 months. And we've had a really good success rate, I think.
Yeah, Mr.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, that was one question we had. But my question is, are you going to get more kids that are more likely to do it in the first and second grade versus... Me personally, I didn't see the 9th or 10th graders necessarily doing it, but it doesn't mean they wouldn't.
I have a 7th grader.
Maybe.
He won't be signed up. I'll tell you that.
Right. I'm talking about the 9th and 10th grade. I just didn't know if you ever...
I don't know. I mean, we try to program for them when we can. It's an age group that doesn't get a lot of programming through us, so we try to do when we can.
Okay.
And those kids need the exercise, and they need the, I guess they would need the credits for PE credits like the other kids.
They asked to get...
And we're willing to work with the schools to help with that PE credit, you know, if they want to. Cool. I see a need to get kids away from the Chromebooks.
Or?
And get outside.
The game pad. And they say that outside is the safest place to be.
Yes. That's why we're not doing any indoor programming at this time.
And each child has the opportunity to lose 2 hours a week.
Yes. 100 kids per age group would have the opportunity for 2 hours once a week. And it'd be on a first-come, first-served basis.
Now, you have 100 children each day, right?
Twice a day.
Twice a day?
Yes, ma'am.
So that's a lot more than 100 kids that could participate.
No, it's only 100 kids per 2 hours. So it's only 100 kids per age group.
If Mrs. Eager, it'd be like 100 kids, the maximum of 100 kids between 9 a.m. and 11 a.m., and then a maximum of 100 kids from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m.
And how do they get there?
Their parents.
Okay,
this is all totally optional for the parents who signed them up for.
Beg your pardon?
This would be totally optional for their parents who signed them up for.
And you think that...
So I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
How do the academics work with your schedule?
I can only speak as a parent, not as a park director, if you'd like for me to. That's up to you. You want me to speak as a parent?
Yeah.
Okay. So my kid, I will contact his teacher, and he will be, if we're doing the one that's on the board, he's in 7th grade, he'll be Wednesday's afternoon, 2 to 4. We will tell the teacher that he won't be online, and we will be doing his work that evening. And from my understanding, every class is going to be taped, and you can view later in that day if you are not able to be there at the present time to log on. So he will be doing, if it's approved, he will be doing either in the morning or in the afternoon, he'll be doing his classwork. So, and that's up to a parent if they can do that with their child.
Good question. That's kind of begs the question, why not do the second one from 3 to 5 and, you know.
The school, I'm not able to use the field at that time.
Gotcha.
I was given 8:15 to 4:30.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about the value of 2 hours a week. Is that what you said?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
From this program, the value of 2 hours a week.
I think it can.
And I'm trying.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, because I've pretty much said the program would be 2 hours a week.
Yes, yeah, so, and some of my thinking behind this was we're helping the school's PE program to get the kids able to get their credits for the week. That was kind of some of the thought. You know, the kids are going to have X amount of things they have to do per week. Well, who's going to do it with them? I don't know how many it is yet. I haven't gotten that as a parent yet. But, some parents can do it with them, some parents can't. This gives them an out away from the computer screen for 2 hours a week at least. They can see their friend next to them at a 6-foot distance. That may be more mental health than anything that these kids really need.
And 2 hours beats zero.
2 hours does beat zero. And they ask you to try to get out an hour a day. That's what people ask.
What about are the PE teachers involved?
Not currently.
No.
Not currently.
Okay. What about sending home to parents, because you're only serving a very small amount of students. What are you going to do with the others that can't come out for 2 hours? You're going to send things home with parents that let the child go outside, run around, whatever.
Miss Booker, I can answer that one a little bit better than Mr. Spitzer. All right. What's going to happen with us is at the middle school, we are going to be setting up a Google Classroom. We are going to be doing videos talking about being able to take 30-minute breaks in between their class time when they're sitting at the computer. Also, we may be going where we're actually teaching live on Fridays because that's our break day for the rest of the teachers. So we may be teaching live on Friday, which works good with this because now if they do Mr. Spitzer's thing on a Wednesday, on Friday, then they're going to get another 45 minutes to an hour with us as PE teachers. We're going to be providing them with links. We're going to be providing them with workouts. At the middle school, we're going to be doing a thing where we're literally, I've talked to Mr. Spitzer about it, we're going to call it field trips. Well, it can't be field trip Fridays anymore because we're now going to be teaching live. We're going to do field trip Wednesdays. We're going to do different things around the county that we can show parents, hey, here's a day trip that you can take with your kids. It's inside of the county and it's inexpensive. So that will help out Mr. Spitzer. He can get them physically active for 2 hours and then we're going to be putting stuff online for the kids to do.
I'm just looking, I don't see the equity for all children. So I see what you're saying. I see that as more valuable than the going coming out 2 hours and stretch and run around. Your PE teachers are going to do all those kinds of things. You're touching the majority of the kids.
Yes, ma'am, but that's what we're supposed to do. All the Mr. Spitzer is talking about doing is giving them an opportunity for whoever can get there and come and do it with him, and it gives the parents maybe a much needed break.
Yeah, it seems to me that if the program works great, if it has low attendance, then maybe they modify it to just be one session a day. You might decide that you're going to do two grades combined. There's nothing. If you're only having 15 kids from 15, 20 grades.
We don't know where we're getting. We're looking at the big picture.
Right. The only challenge I see is the 9 to 11 slot as potentially, coordinating with teachers. But as you said, that's,
that's on the parent kind of thing.
Yeah. That's the problem being that would drive your numbers down. I think that the idea of using the fields and the way you've designed it to provide 8x8 space for each kid with the ability for the kids to stay in their one spot. It's about as safe as you can do it. Kids are not seeing their friends, they're feeling isolated. It's a good opportunity. You might want to be creative about ways that the kids can share with each other without, actually being in contact, because the natural tendency is going to be one.
Well, though, we could partner a friend 6 by 6 feet apart, yep, and they're in their 8x8 space, so they could actually communicate 6 feet apart.
Right.
That's some of the things we're thinking about.
Yep. So I don't see that.
There's no guarantee that friends won't be there.
Nope. No, ma'am.
I'm bothered by the fact that it's such a minimum amount of children whose parents can drop them off and can take advantage of this.
But if I can say, it's almost
now
like...
Now what Mike said about what they are going to be doing, I couldn't hear it all very well, but I could pick up on the fact that they're going to be doing some of those kind of things to make kids go outside and so forth. I don't know. I'm not concerned about whether they're going to be safe.
Well,
I don't know.
I'm just talking about what the middle school is going to do, Ms. Booker. I can tell you right now, I was talking to some of the younger kids, and they were told, you know, you can't ask them to go outside and run around the house three times, because then you're asking them to be unsupervised. So they have limitations to what they can ask them to do.
I mean, I don't see the downside.
They can't run around at home without supervision.
That was one of the things that was brought up to them, as we might not want to ask them to go outside, because all of a sudden, you know, the child's sitting in front of the computer, and the next thing you know, the parent looks, and he's not sitting in front of the computer because he's running five laps around the house, but he's only six.
Right. Yeah, I think there's some care and supervision for a six-year-old. Well, I've talked to a lot of people and asked them what their opinion was, and by and large, most people said no, they wouldn't want this to happen. Wow. I also have 10 grandchildren. I've talked to all of my girls, and they, as mothers, they said no, that they wouldn't do that.
Well, then that comes back to the virtual versus in-person. That would give the parent the choice. The parent would have full choice to choose whether or not they decide to take advantage of this, or whether they said it's too dangerous.
Yeah. Again, I'm struggling to understand what the downside is to at least trying it. You know, they can adjust it as necessary. If the program's successful, great. If it's modestly successful, it can be modified.
All right. Well, so Ms. Eager, I take it you're still against it, ma'am?
Yes, I am.
Ms. Booker?
I'm against it because of equity. That's what I'm against. It's not available to everybody, whether they take a choice or not, even if they wanted to. Even if the parents knew this and wanted to, they had dropped their child off at 11 o'clock. We set up programs for people who can do them. And to me, that is inequality. And I will definitely vote yes, no, because of that.
Can I say one thing? A lot of our programs, they have limit numbers on them. So this would be kind of like no different than another program we would run.
I mean, there's so many things that, like, we could allocate CARES funding potentially to hire an Uber to go pick up the kid, but then parents will say, I don't want my kids getting an Uber, right? So, I mean, you know, we're in COVID. There's just, I understand your point about equity, Ms. Booker, but, you know, it's COVID. There's only so much that can be done, you know?
Ultimately, I think our responsibility is to keep the children safe. At all, please.
Okay, Mr. Weaver, how do you feel? Or Mr. O'Brien, how do you feel?
I think it's a good use of our staff's time and energy. I think that this could be a model for other schools or for other communities. And I think kids need to get outside and they need to socialize beyond just, you know, using their iPads, their iPhones, and their game pads. So, in my opinion, this is, you know, a benefit for the kids, and I think, I don't understand why we wouldn't at least try it.
You are assuming that kids don't get outside and kids don't socialize. That's an assumption, that's a general statement. These kids still play and go outside. They have first cousins that they can still play with and do things with.
Well,
it's not available.
To your point of equity, if you have cousins and you live in a neighborhood where they're friends, then maybe, yeah. I mean, but maybe no. I mean, I think you're looking for the reasons to say no.
Okay, Mr. Weaver, how do you feel, sir?
I would accept it, but I think it has its limitations. It's not going to hurt anything, otherwise.
Okay. Well, I'm for it also. I mean, if it's something,
we have a motion.
Well, and there's really not a motion
just three dogs.
Yeah, I mean, this is really money that's in the Parks and Rec program. And the only reason it's really kind of coming forward is just because of the world of COVID today, and we're using the county's facilities. You know, And there's some funding piece of it, but it's already budgeted in Mr. Spencer's budget. We're not asking for any new funding or anything, so.
And there is a CARES fund.
And I do believe.
Oh, there is a motion?
There is a motion. Remember, we wanted.
Oh,
we wanted
I'm sorry. There there. Is, apparently, there is a motion.
There is. We wanted to put one in.
Thank you for correcting me.
Okie doke.
So let's
do
see.
I have a motion?
I move to approve the program entitled Youth Outdoor Gym Program as presented and discussed in the presentation for the grade levels 1st through 8th, 3rd through 10th by the Parks and Rec.
Yeah,
one, I need one of those.
We need one of the
I'm
two.
Sorry. Oh, okay, I missed that. First through 8th by the Parks and Recreation Department to run September 14th, October 29th, 2020, Monday through Thursday at the designated times on the Flavanna High School football turf field track. Before I finish that motion, does Parks and Rec have a preference between 1st and 8th or 3rd?
We don't. We're comfortable doing either.
Here would be my thought about that.
Okay.
Is if we try 1st through 8th, if we find that the 1st and 2nd graders can't handle social distancing and staying apart, then we come back and we change it from 1st through 8th to 3rd through 10th.
Or maybe you realize it. Maybe you realize it's 2nd through 9th or something like that. I
mean, or you could combine 1st and 2nd and 9th and 10th.
How about, should we modify to say for a maximum of 8 grade levels? Right?
And not exceeding 10th grade?
Not exceeding 10th grade. Because, he might find out you don't have very many 7th and 8th graders or 9th and 10th graders.
You might not have any.
And you can have 7th and 8th graders come one day. 9th and 10th graders come another 2-hour session. So you could get all 10, offer to all 10 grade levels to be equal.
Okay, so then up to 8 grade levels. So I move to approve the program entitled Youth Order Gym Program as presented and discussed in presentation for up to 8 grade levels by the Parks and Recreation Department to run September 14th, October 29th, 2020, Monday through Thursday at the designated times on Flavanna High School football turf field and track.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's been made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Eager?
Nay.
Ms. Booker?
Nay.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 3-2. Next.
What if you only have one or two students going in one of those?
That's when we
will move them to a different program.
Okay.
Yeah. We will program for them that day, and then we'll move them to a different age group.
Yeah, if we find that maybe there are certain age groups or certain time slots that are not, you know, you're not getting a good participation, well then Mr. Spitzer is going to come back to me and say, hey, maybe we need to change this up a little bit.
Jump around. I'm feeling of talking to some of the parents we program for the summer. I don't think we're going to have a problem getting 30, 40 kids at least today.
So they seem somewhat enthusiastic about it.
They were excited. Well, we were trying to do something for the kids.
I was just wondering about that.
And a lot of the stuff we do, we ask parents what they're comfortable with. So thank you all for your time.
Like I said, it's nothing mandatory. It's totally going to be up to their decision.
Yep.
We're going to keep as safe as we possibly can.
We always, yes. Thank you.
All right. Aye. Local allocation for federal CARES coronavirus relief funds. Mr. Dahl.
The only thing I have on this, so we discussed a child care program where CARES funds could be used for county staff. And I know from the last meeting, the board wanted some additional information on that. So this is what we currently have right now. We're looking at possibly where we have 10, maybe 12 to 13 kids. We haven't heard. We did get a little information from the sheriff's office, but below are the departments or offices that said yes, they would have an employee that would have a need, and out of that particular area, how many children would school age children would have that need? Again, this could be a CARES funding initiative that the board brings forward. And you know, I know some of the questions were, you know, would it be better just to have those staff members stay home? Well, some of those positions will not allow for that. I'll use the treasurer's office as an example. You know, during tax season, she has to have everyone available in that area to be able to collect taxes and it wouldn't allow for it. Now, that may not be the case for all these areas, but I think overall, I think there's some merit to it, and I don't necessarily know that we want to get into saying, well, we'll do this department, but not that department. So, and again, if they're working and if they have school-age children. But like I said, we had a little bit of a need, and we just wanted to bring the information back to the board, and I know some of the board members have some questions about this.
It's the treasurer's office not only collecting taxes, but getting the bills out. That's why theirs will be much longer, and that's the department with the most people affected.
And this is a reimbursement for child care, or is
this
rerun?
No, and we would have to get with Mr. Spitzer, who is, and we'll have to see how that works.
It would use current county staff and or school staff to staff that position?
What do we use? It
wouldn't be school.
No, it wouldn't be school staff.
The schools, I understand the teachers are paying for their child care.
At the schools? I don't believe that's the
case. That's the last I heard.
I don't think we can do this. I really don't think it's a good thing to do. I mean, we've been in lockdown for 6 months, and we've been handling it, or the people who are working are handling it somehow. I don't think it's a good idea to ask the taxpayers to, when they can't have somebody pay for their care.
So,
it's not the right thing.
So we're not talking about general fund dollars. We're talking about CARES funds. But again, yes, you are. It would be a program that was specific to county staff.
But then, look, CARES, why don't we pay for everybody's child care if it be used for that?
Because the U.S. Treasury won't allow it. The funds are most specifically for the use of government.
Yeah, I just don't think it's right.
Are there any other counties around us that are doing this?
No.
The only way I think it's supportable is for an essential personnel that cannot come to work because they have to take care of their kids. That, you know, and somebody like a, you know, obviously a deputy would fall potentially into that category. Public safety and health. That would be the only sort of supportable, in my opinion, position on that, because you're doing it for the health and well-being of the county.
But then you go with the treasurer's office, they got 5 employees or 6 employees, 4 of them have children. And those guys,
tell me, what are they doing now? Who's watching their children now?
Well, I can tell you that I don't know the exact for the particular employees, but I can probably say that some of them have been spread out between family members, maybe, you know, grandparents, and, you know, that can go for a while, but I'm not sure, you know, what the long-term viability is. And like I said, I'm not pushing on this one way or the other. It was, you know, when we were doing it, when it was coming out, and, you know, there was a discussion about the schools, and we wanted to see if there was any need from county staff, and we just put it out to staff, and this is what we came up with, and some departments feel there was a need, but if the board doesn't want to move forward with it, we can certainly drop it.
And do you have a plan? Like, were you going to have all the children come to the county administration building and one person watch them?
That would be no.
Hire babysitters for everybody?
No, it would be a one room program.
What's a one room program?
Basically meaning the program would take place in one location for those children.
Just like all the daycare facilities.
Yes.
Well, what if you have like teenagers? They're not going to want to sit in a room with a bunch of other little kids for all day while their mom's at work.
I would not imagine that teenagers would want to take part in this program.
I wouldn't think so.
I know one of the girls at the treasurer's office is a single mom, with a small child, and her parents are, oh, I don't even want to call out ages, but their oldest son is older than I am. So they're right at 80. And that's just a lot for them to watch.
And so who's been watching them so far? Where are they?
I can't answer that question, Ms. Eager.
Can we distinguish between county employees and other people that go out and work? Is there a difference without employees? Are they community workers? Are they more essential? Is there a distinction? It has to be, if we want to do something that's different for our employees, there has to be a distinction, a difference between what they do and what other parents do when they go to work.
Well,
Mr. Johnson Peter is saying, why do we do it for everybody?
Well, Mrs. Booker, I mean,
are we saying because we can only use care money, we can use care money for our employees because of they work for the government?
To keep government.
Yes.
They work for who?
To keep the government.
Yes.
They are our backbone people. They run the county.
Yes, they are helping to keep the county operation and services running.
Right.
But I don't disagree that there is a need community-wide, and if there was a way to help out the community-wide, that would be fantastic. But we have not come to positive guidance that allows that.
I think another challenge is, and I'm curious, maybe you don't know whether the school board discussed this or not, but you know, we try to create equity between county staff and school staff as well too. We could be putting the school in a difficult position by promoting this, and or likely the school, I believe, has already gone through most of their CARES funding and so doesn't have it. So they'd be coming back to us and asking for that. And you know, by the time you go through all those things, and it's only it's only a 90-day period at this point in time, it seems like it's just not the best use of funds at this point in time. That's my opinion.
Alrighty. Well, I'd like to help our employees out in any way we can. That's my only thought on it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I know that I'm pretty sure that the teachers are going to get child care, and I support that. But I understand that they're paying. That's something we need clarification on.
Well,
I don't think school's on the line. And I can understand why they need it. So I can also equate our staff with the teachers. I think they're in the same ball game as for the service that they do for our community to keep us going. Teachers, children, and I think some parents would understand that as well.
Keep in mind, you put teachers in that equation. Now you're talking about a lot more kids, potentially. And then now you're talking about...
I understand it's not a lot of kids. It's not a whole lot. But there are some.
350 teachers, is my guess. I will bet you that half of them have children.
Yeah. Is anybody any school board member or any school staff there that wants
to? Who is?
Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Kelly's on.
Mr. Kelly, have you guys talked about it? Do you have an opinion?
He was.
How about Mr. Winkler or Mr. Stribling?
He is gone. He was here and he's gone now.
No, apparently there's no one from the schools on her at this moment.
can't hear you, Greg.
Yeah, there's no one on from the schools, Ms. Booker. I can either get more information and come back to the next meeting, or we can drop it.
Well, we can table it again.
I would table it, find some more information, because like I said, you know, I know for sure, looking at that sheriff's office, those are people that are absolutes. I don't know if there's anybody that's a single parent there that's got a child.
And again, that's what I said at the beginning. I don't have, if it's an essential position like that and they cannot work from home, yeah. That's one thing. Whether that one treasurer employee can work from home or not.
Well, there's four of them.
No, I know.
Which is most of the office. Yeah, I just knew about one. But I mean, there's four of them, which is 2/3 of the office. And they got to go through sending out the bills and collecting everything. So it's going to be awful. And they can't do that over the phone.
Does Mr. Weaver have an opinion?
Mr. Weaver?
I would leave it where it is. I think it has holes in it. But there's nothing perfect, and I just don't know. Honestly don't.
So let's get some more information.
Yes, ma'am.
Next time it'll be.
We're moving. We're going to table it. Move. Get some more information. See if you can find it. Ma'am?
Yeah. Anyway, well, keep it working now.
See if we can find what counties are or what counties aren't.
One last bit on this. I know we mentioned it, but upgrades to facilities, bathroom facilities.
Yeah.
Something that we're looking at doing.
So we do. We have that touchless restroom fixture is an item on there. We've been pretty spread thin on a lot of the other items, so we haven't got to that component yet. I know I talked to Mr. Hickman about talking about possibly we'd have to do some type of invitation for bid to do a complete replacement of all county facilities fixtures, and I mean I'm not sure what that looks like, but I mean we can certainly work on it. We're trying to get the whole renovation piece and some other things pushing first.
I was speaking to a client of mine, yep. Many products, they do flush valves and all those. And anecdotally, just asked him how business was going, et cetera. And he said, good and bad, but one thing that we can't keep in stock right now are these touchless things. So if we're going
to
look at that, look at that ball moving sooner than later.
Yep.
And those can be sourced, locally.
Sure.
Too. So just a thought.
Yeah. No. And like I said, we have it on there. There's a lot of things we have on there. It's just, it's interesting with the CARES funding. One, it's amazing how difficult it is to really kind of, apply some really good, make sense uses to some of this. And then secondly, we feel like we're cruising through the week with our hair on fire because there's so many things just happening and there's so many things that can be done. So like I said, we have it on there to hopefully we can get something addressed on that.
All right. Are there any other ideas?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
In the nature, since you're discussing these CARES funds, one of the questions that's come up in connection with the Broad Street project is whether the board has made a decision as to whether you...
I can't hear. It's a lot of scratching noise.
Yeah, I can't hear.
There's y'all. Thank you.
The question that comes up in connection with the broadband project, whether the board prefers the short line or the long line, and we could write it either way, but it would be a lot easier if the board had a preference for us to put that into negotiation. Right.
I'm glad you brought that up because that's what I was trying to remember I wanted to bring up tonight. I went back and did some checking. I've done some calling around. There were, on that stretch of road, I believe there's about 30 kids in those 50 houses. And that's a rough estimate, but talking to a couple of parents, talking to the school buses, the buses pick up 15, but about half of our kids don't ride a school bus anymore. And then, if they're 10th, 11th, 12th grade, they're probably not riding the school bus because they're getting a ride to school or driving themselves. So, and Mr. Weaver, what we're talking about is we had a choice whether we could spend $340,000 to put a line from Wilmington to Fort Kenyon, or we could add an additional 170, which is about 170 per house, to make it 520. I think it was
520.
520 is the total cost. I think I'm off on it. Anyway,
so yeah,
if we go down a little bit towards Columbia, it's 1.7 miles that we'd add 56 houses. So, like I said, it's for getting a wireless internet or getting internet to the kids that don't have it. And I mean, I don't know how the internet is there, but I'm sure there's some folks that don't have it.
Yes, the only thing available there is satellite. And I mean, I've heard from people that live on that stretch that have the best that you can have, and it's not sufficient. But that's
I mean, the question was the bang for the buck. We don't have an answer today, and I mean, I think that, you know, there were other reasons that, you know, down the road might be beneficial to have that in place. But, you know, the initial bang for the buck to me seemed.
Well, but we also were looking at things that were non-CARES Act related.
No, I know. That's why mentioning.
Yeah, right, right. So,
yeah, I mean, for us, this is trying to. I mean, again, you know, we need to expand broadband, and again, baby steps. The further we can get it to those that need it, the better. That's
the only reason I was arguing in favor of it last week, is I think that. That's an underserved area. We're getting it to people who absolutely need it. And yes, there are children. I mean, and 56 houses for 1.7 miles is a lot more than the 8-mile stretch of line that we're going to lay that only gets 100 houses.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it occurs to me that I ran a per household cost at your last meeting. They're almost exactly the same.
That's what I was trying to say in the beginning. I think the 170 twice, and then another 170 gets us 56 houses. Ms. Eager, Ms. Booker, what do y'all think about it this week?
Same thing I thought last week. I have any additional information. I can see the advantage in the future. So, you know, fine with me. I just don't. A lot of people are not even, you know, a lot of people that I know that's in that area probably wouldn't even sign up for it, period.
They may not, but if they've got school-age children, they'll have the opportunity to sign up for it.
Children that live there, down in there, pretty much for me, their parents probably can't afford it, wouldn't know, care. Let's say give them a deal.
You know what,
I'm not going to argue putting fiber.
Okay. All right, Ms. Eager.
Question, are you going to be able to get this done before December
30th? Yes, CVEC says they can.
They're pretty confident.
They're very confident.
All right, then you have my vote.
And quite frankly, this is a little different than the renovation project, because as they're laying the fiber, they're hooking up homes as they go. So let's just say they intended to go seven.
We've gotten four nods on Mr. Weaver, five nods to go ahead and go with the big program. So
the longer program?
Yes, sir.
You didn't ask for my vote. What do you mean?
Oh, I thought you said you. I'm sorry, Ms. Booker.
I did not. You did not ask for vote.
Okay.
You assumed because what I said. I said in the end. I said I'm fine. Let's go with it.
I'm waiting, and there was
no vote.
Well, we're
I'm
not
voting. Yeah, it's fine. I have reservations, and I said that before. Am I
going to
hold up fiber? No.
Ms. Booker, I don't think we have to have an actual vote. It's not a motion. It's just head nods, ma'am.
Well, then don't Yeah, but Don said four, and I knew that that meant I was voting against.
I understand, so that, I understand that there's consensus of board to go for the long.
I apologize, Ms. Booker. I was not trying to read your mind, but when you said fine, I thought that meant you were voting for it. So thank you.
Yes, I'm voting for it. I'm voting for it. A yes.
Thank you. Is there any new business? Okay, seeing none, I will now open the second round of public comment. Anyone wish to address the board, please keep your comments. State your name and address. Keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Does anyone wish to speak this time?
Possibly. There's one person.
I believe we may have one person for public comment. Is there someone there?
They're muted, and I've asked them to unmute. But
if you want to speak for public comment, will you unmute? Okay, so seeing none, I will now close the second round of public comment. Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the Nevada County Board of Supervisors to enter into a closing pursuant to provision section 2.2-3711A1, section 2.2-3711A5, section 2.2-3711A6 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing personnel, respective industry, and adjustment of funds.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver? Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We're now in closed session.
Good.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Savannah County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, one only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered.
A motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver? Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Do we have a motion to extend 9:30?
So made.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Do we have a motion to adjourn? Oh, chair votes aye. Motion passed 5-0. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So made.
Yes, I move that we adjourn.
Motion's made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mrs. Eager. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver? Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Chair votes aye. 5-0. We are adjourned.